This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. A Boise cyclist has been found guilty of causing a July car crash that left her in the hospital. Late last week, an Ada County magistrate judge found Elizabeth Hilton guilty of causing the accident, and he ordered she pay a $90 fine, saying she disobeyed the traffic lights at an intersection and rode through it when it wasn't safe. Now, as some of you may know, here in Idaho, cyclists can treat a red light similar to a stop sign. They must stop, but then they are allowed to ride through an intersection against a red light so long as it is safe to do. Now, as you can imagine, this verdict has many people asking questions, and it's brought some high emotion as well. Joining us today live in studio to talk more about this are Hilton's attorney, Kurt Holzer, who also sits on the board of the Idaho Walk Bike Alliance, and Jason Dykstra, a professor at Concordia Law School. Both of you, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sure, as you can both imagine, as we mentioned, lots of high emotion around this case. So, Kurt, you said you haven't seen a decision like this in the 25 years you've been practicing law. Why is that?
Well, fundamentally, and not to be too demeaning of the judge, I thought he did a fine job except for his conclusion, he applied the wrong law. There's a law that says cars have to stop and stay stopped. There's a law that says bicycles can stop and proceed after yielding. What happened is the police officer charged Ms. Hilton with not following the car law. Two separate laws. They charged her under the wrong law. And then factually, we can get into the factual issues. It's pretty clear that she was hit while in the bike lane after the intersection and actually had proceeded across the intersection safely. But that's a factual fight.
So if I'm understanding this right, the prosecutor in this case argued that Hilton's bicycle was a vehicle, as you talked about. And this is citing Idaho Code 49-801.
Correct.
So this is the code where it is the driver, and this is what it states, the driver of any vehicle shall obey the instructions of any traffic control device placed or held in accordance with provisions of this title. So this is the part where you were saying we already have a law, and this is what we call that Idaho stop law.
Sure. Idaho Code 49714 says you have to follow, as a cyclist, you have to follow the motor vehicle laws in Title 6 and Title 8, like 801, unless otherwise provided in the 700 series. And the 700, 720 sub 2 says if a cyclist stops at a stoplight, the cyclist can proceed through the stoplight after yielding to other traffic. You know, and I don't want to hash through all the testimony. We didn't even really get through that testimony because the prosecutor and the judge focused on the wrong statute. Ms. Hilton admits she stopped at the stoplight and went through it when it was red. There never been a fight about that. The question is, from our perspective, the question is, where did the collision happen and why did it happen? We think it's an illegal turn. It has nothing to do with her going through the stoplight when it's red.
So Jason, let's talk a little bit more about this Idaho law regarding being able to roll through an intersection on a red light. Can this law make the lines blurry for motorists and for cyclists?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
The law dates back to the early 80s, and it was part of an overall effort to revamp statutes that pertain to cycling at the time. And there's really two provisions. They're both pretty straightforward. The first one is when a cyclist approaches a stop sign, the cyclist can effectively treat that as a yield sign. And then the second provision is that when a cyclist approaches a stop light, the cyclist can effectively treat that as a stop sign, with a narrow exception for when you're turning right as a cyclist. So it really, I don't think it needs to be anything that, you know, raises that many concerns for either cyclists or for drivers. It's been the law for over three decades.
So why can't a bicycle be deemed a vehicle? And this goes back to Kurt, you saying that they focused on the wrong code. I mean, a bicycle is a mode of transportation.
Sure, and a bicycle is a vehicle. What you have to realize, the reality is that the modes are different. And cyclists have a better sense of perception about what's going on around them, right? They're not encased in a vehicle. They can see more to the right, to the left. They're more agile. They're different vehicles. And what these statutes do, is they acknowledge this difference in cycling. And what we've seen now is Delaware, Arkansas, Oregon, Colorado, probably soon Utah, probably soon California. More states are adopting this this statute over time because of the effectiveness of it. Historically, in Idaho, we saw the rate of injury of motor vehicle and bicycle collisions went down almost 20% in the couple of years after it was initially adopted.
Well, as you can imagine, we have had a lot of folks comment on our Facebook page about this topic. And I want to read one comment right now. This is from Ron from our Facebook page. As long as we have rush hours, distracted drivers, significant in-migration, and little driver's training regarding bicyclists, the law is dangerous. Anyone who rides a bike in Boise these days will have many close calls. So he does bring up a good point about education. How about this new drivers needing to know about the Idaho stop? Because we've talked about the Idaho stop on this program before, and it is not something readily known, if you are not in the cycling community.
Sure. I don't think you're wrong about that. Now, we have added, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago now, there have been cycling law questions added to the Idaho driver's license testing. So there has been some movement in that direction. But a lack of knowledge is clearly one of the problems. I mean, all of the issues raised by this comment, though, they don't really go to this law in and of itself. They go to the multimodal transportation usage of the roadway.
And Jason, how does that come back to the idea of, is there more onus put on motorists with this law, or is it, would you say it's an even split?
I view it as an even split. I don't really think there's an onus that's placed on motorists so much as a responsibility that's placed on cyclists as you approach a stop sign or a red light.
I want to have talk to you about another comment. This is from Josh on Facebook. The Idaho stop helps me feel safer on one-way streets without bike lanes. I can get up to speed before the light turns green and avoid having a bunch of cars trying to blow by me on my left side. So, Kurt, is this really an issue of a lack of bike infrastructure on our roads?
Sure. I mean, one of the things we know is separate infrastructure makes the world safer. We do have a lack of bike infrastructure, but it's unrealistic to constantly say we need 100% bike infrastructure and figure out how are we, you know, to follow the current thing coming out of the council and the mayor. How can we be kind to each other? How can we pay attention to each other? That's really the issue. I mean, it's very interesting. I view some of the animosity or anger towards cyclists coming from motorists is actually coming from a good place, because what it's really coming from is many of these folks are just scared they're going to hurt somebody. They're going to have this negative interaction, and that leads to this fear and a little bit of othering. And the cyclists, I've never met one who wants to get run over.
Well, right. Well, and I think back to your point, though, that to be the devil's advocate here, I think there are also times where bicyclists, you know, go out in traffic when they shouldn't. They race in front of a car, right? I mean, we've seen that as well. And where does that play into this, Kurt? Because there is an animosity. There truly is. Oh, go ahead, Jason.
Go ahead, Jason.
I think it's important to take a deep breath and realize we're all multimodal. You know, I'll walk my dog this afternoon. I happen to ride my bike over to the studio today, but I'll be driving my car later today. And maybe it's less looking at it as motorists versus cyclists, as realizing none of us are perfect. We've probably all broken a speed limit at some point.
Oh, I never.
Maybe not fully stopped for a stop sign in our car. And, you know, having a little compassion for our fellow users of our roadways and recognizing that, you know, no motorist or cyclist is perfect. We all have good moments and suboptimal moments where maybe we're not paying attention, and you know, recognize that the cyclist or the driver of the car could be a friend, your doctor, your lawyer, your law professor, your plumber.
Well, just another human being.
Exactly.
Right. We're talking with attorney Kurt Holzer, who sits on the board of the Idaho Walk Bike Alliance, and Jason Dykstra. He's a professor at Concordia Law School. We're talking about a case last week where a Boise cyclist was cited for causing a crash in July. I want to read another comment from Facebook, this time from a cyclist named Paige. Riding a bicycle is a huge risk, but it is one I'm willing to take. I have had so many close calls, but it doesn't stop me from getting back on my bike. I try to be hyper aware, but I know sometimes I miss something and other times it's a driver's fault. I feel terrible for those involved in this case and hope everyone involved is still willing to ride their bike.
You know, I've been a lawyer involved in collision cases for 25 years. The vast majority have been car versus car. Right? People run into each other's cars. People run red lights. People make mistakes behind the wheel all the time with cars and trucks. Bikes are just one component of it. I think to tie back to one thing that Jason was saying, I think something that emphasizes this, we are all a little different. It's also that we have different perceptions. Inside that car, I have a certain measure of perceptions, and I know what my vehicle can do and how fast it can go and how fast I can stop and how fast I can move. Cyclists are different, and their ability to move laterally, their ability to stop, their ability to perceive what's going on around them is different. And I watch, when I'm behind the wheel of my car, watch a cyclist move and think, you know, did that really make sense? But from the cyclist perspective, it did, because their tool is different. They're using a completely different tool. And there's this sort of other component there.
So I want to ask both of you this. Let's go back to the Idaho code 49720. That's the code with the Idaho stop. When it talks about it being, you know, you make that stop at the red light when it is safe to go, you can proceed. The cyclist makes that determination as to what is safe. My perception of what is safe is probably going to be different than what your perception is of safe. So should there potentially be something in the law that has something to do with distance? Or does that matter with a cyclist?
So it's not just a cyclist. You can make a right turn on red when it's safe, right? Okay, discretion
absolutely.
Is part discretion in society, right? You know, these hard – this is why, you know, automatic driving vehicles are never going to work because they can't. Because there is so much discretion operating behind operating a vehicle, how much and how we all interact. You know, I think in any instance there will be a certain number of moments where everybody would say that would be unsafe and a certain number of moments where everybody would say that would be safe. And then there's going to be a continuum where some people might perceive safety and some people might not perceive safety based on who they are and what they're driving, what the situation is, what the weather's like, and all those many variables. And that's the nature of the human experience, right? And it's the nature of the law. Sometimes bright lines work. This is not an area where some sort of bright line would work.
And Jason, you would agree with that?
Absolutely. I think you have so many variables, whether it's speed limit that the vehicle's traveling at, the location, if it's a you know, one of the lights I routinely face when I'm riding or driving from my house is on a road with a curve, and that throws a whole nother. Mm-hmm. So I think there needs to remain a fair amount of discretion, and we leave it up to individuals in our society to exercise that discretion.
So, Kurt, the ruling, the decision came down Thursday that your client was found guilty. She was cited $90 to pay a fee. You have since filed...
Filed a motion for reconsideration. You know, God bless this judge, but he just simply got it wrong. I mean, the cop got it wrong. They charged under a statute that doesn't apply. The prosecutor pursued a statute that doesn't apply, and the judge convicted under a statute that doesn't apply. I've asked him one more time to reconsider and say, look, between 49.714, which says otherwise provides, and 720, which otherwise provides for cyclists, you can't convict a cyclist under 49.801. He may or may not go that way. If he doesn't, we'll appeal. No significant worries that we won't ultimately prevail in the case.
So, Jason, we know Kurt's side of this, and of course, the side of his client. You being a neutral party as a law professor, do you think that the judge made the right decision in this case?
I have absolutely no idea. I wasn't present.
Wasn't there?
At the
you weren't
trial.
There, right?
I haven't seen any of the evidence. Ultimately, you know, one of the tough things that any judge faces is deciding factual disputes, and you know it's pretty routine in the Treasure Valley that both parties believe they have a green light, and ultimately, whether it's a judge or a jury, somebody has to decide who had the green light and make those factual determinations.
I want to end on some wise words from Karen on Facebook. She says, "I use the Idaho stop all the time, always making sure the intersection is clear. Always assume you are invisible when you go through an intersection. Be safe."
I think she's right. Liz did make sure the intersection was clear. She was hit after the intersection.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today and talking about this and giving us just some more clarity about these statues and how they work. And thank you to our listeners as well who reached out on Facebook and participated in the conversation today. So important to have our listeners' perspective on this as well. We've been talking with attorney Kurt Holzer. He also sits on the board of the Idaho Walk Bike Alliance, and Jason Dykstra, professor at Concordia Law School. Both of you, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, how One Idaho College is creating more affordable student housing one shipping container at a time. This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll be right back.